Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3, 3, 3, 3. After a fierce battle, an ongoing struggle with apathy and laziness, we are back from the brink, back from the pit of darkness, and back on Backlit Cinema, the podcast. I'm your host, Zoe, that's Z-O or Z-O if you're outside of the U.S., taking a look back at the movies of yesteryear. Admittedly, an entire week late, I was unfortunately overcome with an overwhelming episode of laziness, but I think that I'm back to normal now, and I'm glad that you've returned to join me to talk about some awesome movies. It's the 102nd episode. Thank you for downloading or streaming. We really appreciate it. So listen in as I talk about the movies we love when we were growing up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Now, as you may surmise, this episode is an entire week late. It was supposed to come out on Monday, last Monday, but for various reasons, such as being the new guy on the new job and an overpowering feeling of apathy and laziness, I didn't get around to recording. I was going to put it out on Wednesday. I actually put out a tweet about having an episode published on Wednesday, but these feelings that I had continued. So now here we are, but I'm in a much better place now. So let's get to it. One of the reasons that I got caught up in laziness was I started to play a new game. This game that I've been playing is called Control. If you haven't heard about Control, it came out in 2019. And at the time, there was a lot of positive buzz about it. I'm finally getting around to playing, and it's almost like I don't want to do anything else. Speaking of video games, I've also been checking out The Last of Us, the new show on HBO based on the critically acclaimed video game series. That game has an outstanding story, and coming from the perspective of a person who's played both of the games in the series, the show is faithful to the game with great acting. It's beautifully shot and just the right amount of suspense and terror. And speaking of terror, I'm also watching Velma on HBO, and I don't think it's as terrible as many people are making it out to be. I get what it's trying to do. I've had some laugh out loud moments while watching it, and I'm going to stick with it for the time being. I mean, it's bloody. It's got some blood in it. You got to love that, right? Speaking of blood, that brings us to the movie that we watched last week, and that movie was Bloodsport. And this is the opening credits section. Is it section or segment? Let's call it a segment. Opening credits on Bloodsport. So, brief summary of the movie. Allegedly based on the true life story of Frank Dukes, Bloodsport is the story of a man named Frank Dukes who wants to bring honor to the father figure who taught him martial arts by competing in the secret and dangerous martial arts tournament known as the Kumite. That's it. That's the story. Released on April 29th, 1988, produced by Canon International, it grossed over $11 million in the U.S. and Canada on a $1.1 million budget, and it had mixed reviews. This movie is starring Jean-Claude Van Damme as Frank Dukes. You may have seen him in one of his earliest movies, No Retreat, No Surrender, or in Lionheart, or in Double Impact. He has a robust filmography. He's been in a lot of movies, some of them that were released theatrically, and I believe some of them were cable movies, and some probably direct-to-video. I'm not exactly sure. I know that I am not familiar with most of the movies that is on his filmography, but I remember growing up, I tried to catch every Jean-Claude Van Damme film that came out. So, this is just a sampling of what he's done that I'm familiar with. I think that I've only seen Lionheart and Double Impact of this list. Also starring Donald Gibb as Ray Jackson. You may have seen him in Revenge of the Nerds. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. You may have seen him in Revenge of the Nerds or Hancock or in U.S. Marshals. Also starring Leah Ares. She plays Janice Kent. She's also been in The Burning, All That Jazz, and The Player. Norman Burton. He plays Helmer. He's been in Diamonds Are Forever, Planet of the Apes, and The Towering Inferno. Forest Whitaker plays Rawlings. He was in The Last King of Scotland, The Butler, and Black Panther, and many other fantastic movies and films. I don't know why I said movies and films. They're the same thing. Movies, films, picture shows. They're all the same. Also starring Roy Chow. He plays Sesno Tanaka. I hope I pronounced his name right. Anyway, he's been in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom as one of my favorite characters. He's also been in Summer Snow and Game of Death. Philip Chan played Captain Chen. He's been in Hard Boiled and Super Cop. Pierre Raffini played Young Frank Dukes? Yeah, Young Frank Dukes, like, put up your Dukes. Interestingly, he's French. I don't know if he's French-Canadian or he's from France or another French-speaking country. But I think they made sure to get a young actor who could speak French since Jean-Claude Van Damme himself is from Belgium. And he speaks French. I know he's from Brussels, but is Brussels the city or the nation? I know that he speaks French. And so they got a young character that can speak French to account for Jean-Claude Van Damme's accent. Bolo Young played Shang Li. He's been in Double Impact and Enter the Dragon. Ken Sui. Siu? It could be Keat. It could be Ken Siu. He played Victor Lin. He's been in Off Limits as an actor, but he spends most of his time. It's like his actual profession is behind the camera. So most of his work, he's known as, or he was known as being either a second unit or assistant director. And he's had that role in Rush Hour and The Forbidden City. Shunlin Leung played Mrs. Tanaka. She's been in Tough Beauty and The Sloppy Slop. That's not two movies. I think that's one movie. It's one movie called Tough Beauty and The Sloppy Slop. It could be a Hong Kong movie. And that's how they named it. That's the name of the movie. Most interesting. Moving right along. It was directed by Newt Arnold. So not a huge filmography as a director. Most of his more notable films has been him as a second unit or assistant director. So the only movies that I have for him that he actually directed by himself or that he got full credit as a director is Bloodthirst and Hands of a Stranger. Not surprising considering the type of movie that Bloodsport is. The story is by Sheldon Lettich, screenplay by Christopher Crosby and Mel Friedman. So, as stated earlier, this is based on the life of Frank Dukes, as told by himself. And it was adapted by Sheldon Lettich. And he's written Max, Lionheart, and Rambo 3. Christopher Crosby only wrote Bloodsport, no other credits. And Mel Friedman wrote Death Sentence, Death Silence, and Shudder. There seems to be a theme there. The music was by Paul Herzog. He has 8 composer credits to his name, including Kickboxer, Breathing Fire, and Dangerous Love. So that's it for the opening credits. And if you're enjoying the show, remember that you can get t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, face masks, jerseys, and more at our website, backlickcinema.com/shop. Christmas has passed, but that gives us a chance to restock. So if you've been looking for the stuff on the site and it hasn't been in stock, it might be back in stock. Just go check it out. It might be there. Go check it out. Anyway, so now or the next segment, I should say, we're going to be talking about our favorite parts. And we're back. We're going to be talking about our favorite parts of the movie that is Bloodsport. So this is one of my favorite movies for the most part. Like growing up, it came out in, like I said, 1983. So I'm a very young man then, just barely getting into high school thing. I think maybe this is when I was in junior high. So I'm very much into action movies. And so Bloodsport is like just the top of the action movies that influenced me as I was growing up. It didn't want to make me like learn actual martial arts. I didn't want to go to the karate studio or the kung fu studio or whatever studio that might have been in the area and try to learn, you know, any actual fighting discipline. But as a little kid, it do make you want to throw kicks around. I just absolutely loved what I saw in the movie. And even though this movie doesn't age well, I still enjoy watching it. And it's all nostalgia. Now, I'm going to put it all on the table. This is a bad movie. This is technically a bad movie. This is a bad movie that I absolutely love. And I couldn't explain to you why, except to say that probably the overwashing of nostalgia when I watch this movie, because it has all the things that make it bad. It doesn't have a great story. It has really subpar acting. I'll say subpar. I don't want to say bad acting. At the time this movie came out, people were taunting Jean-Claude Van Damme as like an action version of, I don't know, Laurence Olivier or somebody like that. People really enjoyed his acting. And I think what's neat about him is that he has a certain charisma about him. And the other thing is that he has, he's somewhat good at acting subtle. The only other people that actually did a really standout job were Norman Burton and Forrest Whitaker. Obviously, Forrest Whitaker. You know, Forrest Whitaker, he still had that swagger in this movie. It's one of his very early roles. Both him and Burton, they play some kind of government agents that are chasing Frank Dukes. So the story is that Frank Dukes wants to attend this secret martial arts tournament. He's a officer in the military. I believe he's a captain. I can't remember if it was the Air Force or Marines, something like that. But anyways, he's not given permission to leave and attend this event. So he sneaks out. He runs away. So the government sends out two agents. I'm not sure if they're military agents or like the CIA or anything like that. They're not strictly identified. But you know that they're after Frank Dukes. When they get to Hong Kong, where the tournament is supposed to take place, they're asking everybody around, you know, where Frank Dukes is. And I like the way that they're paired together almost like a good cop, bad cop, where Norman Burton's Helmer is playing the good cop, and Forrest Whitaker, who plays Rawling, is the bad cop. It's like Forrest Whitaker is the young, aggressive agent who's trying to, he kind of wants to force people to give him the information that he's asking. And Norman Burton, who plays Homer, he's trying to calm the young cop down. This young, excited, energetic cop, or agent, or whatever you want to call him, is trying to calm him down and focus his energies more. I want to say he wants to focus Rollins' energy more calmly, because he's trying to calm him down more effectively. Because, you know, you're not going to get information out of trying to beat witnesses or people with information. these are innocent people, innocent citizens. You're not going to get information or cooperation by trying to beat them over the head. You got to be gentle. And then when you can't get the information, just pull back. You know, he's trying to teach. So you have Helmer trying to teach Rawlins how to be more effective and not be so excitable. Also, you have veteran actor Roy Chio, who puts on a good performance. He's definitely not is not going to be his like greatest performance, but at the same time, he's not phoning it in. And then like everybody else is kind of like playing a character actor, like Philip Chan. He's playing the Captain Chin. He's, you know, it's more of a character actor role. And so they're all basically playing their part and they're playing it pretty good, but they're not going to excite you over their work. It's not going to be, it's just, they're just doing their part for the story, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But my favorite moments are when Bolo Young is in a movie. Whenever, like, because I don't know, I always get excited over Bolo Young for no particular reason. He's a gigantic man, and he's always pushing his weight around. He was in Enter the Dragon, and what was interesting about this movie is that he actually says some of the lines that Bruce Lee says in Enter the Dragon, and that was, so I'll point to that as one of my favorite parts. There was a part in the movie where Frank Dukes had to prove that he had the right to attend this secret competition. Now, apparently invitations are sent out to certain individuals or certain families, and then members of that family can inherit an invitation. So Frank Dukes is trying to prove that he has inherited an invitation from his father figure, which is Tanaka, and that is the character that was played by Roy Chiles. So he's trying to, so they say, well, you got to prove it. You got to show us something that only he could have taught you. So you got to, they want to see the death touch. So they have a stack of bricks and it is like made out like a mini wall. And he's supposed to break one of these bricks. And at first, someone directs him to break a brick on the top, one of the very top bricks on this like little wall. This is, it's no, it's like maybe a foot high, a wall. No, it's not even a foot high. maybe 6 inches high. This wall of bricks. And it's not even a wall. It's more like a stack. I don't know how to explain it. Anyway, it's there for, I guess, demonstrations. So they said, somebody suggests he break one of the top bricks. And as he prepares, you know, he does his breathing and he flexes his arm. And then the people who are running this event, this kumite, they say, no, we want you to break one of the bottom bricks. He's like, you can't break the top brick. Anybody can break a top brick. You got to break the bottom brick. So he has to hit the stack in such a way that the brick that he actually hits is undamaged. The brick that's under that brick is undamaged. And the brick that's on the very bottom is destroyed. And so he nods his head. He does breathing exercises. He strikes the brick and he breaks the brick on the bottom, leaving all the other bricks unharmed. And he proved that he had death touch and that he had the right to be invited or to accept, or what's the word I was looking for? He proved that he was taught by Tanaka and that he had inherited the right to be in the kumite. And Bolo Young and some other fighters, they see this demonstration. And this is where he says something that was said by Bruce Lee in Enter the Dragon. He says something similar. So in Enter the Dragon, Bruce Lee says, boards don't hit back. And Bolo Young in this movie, he says, bricks don't hit back. And I think that was a little Easter egg that they want to put in. But it was a nice little moment. It was a nice moment that I enjoyed. And also what I liked about this movie were all the sweet training and fighting montages. Obviously, they're going to start off with the training montage, because in the beginning of the movie, young Frank Dukes, played by the younger actor, you know, he goes, him and a friend, they go and they try to steal a samurai sword for some reason from some man that they don't know. And that man turns out to be Tanaka. And the friend gets away, but Frank Duke gets caught. And Frank Dukes get caught by Tanaka. And Tanaka was like, well, you got to earn this. You can't just steal something like this. You have to earn it. And this leaves an impression on young Frank Duke. So he asks to be trained. And at first it's the man's son. The man is training his son. So he's actually using Frank Dukes as a sparring partner for his son. So teaches Frank Dukes just enough so that he can be the sparring partner. And then later on, much later, like I guess 10 years later, when Frank Dukes is a young adult, we see that Tanaka's son has died. I watched the movie together with Zachary, and Zachary seems to think that he had died in Nukumite. And during the story, they make reference to Bolo Young, or the character that Bolo plays is Chong Lee, how Chong Lee had killed somebody during a tournament. And Zachary believes that this was the death of Tanaka's son. And it wasn't clear to me, but Zachary might be right. But it's not. Maybe you can tell me. I don't know exactly for sure. But the great training montages that you have. Frank Dukes now wants Tanaka to train him for real. Tanaka doesn't want to train anymore because his son has been killed. But Frank Dukes pesters Tanaka enough so that Tanaka goes out and decides to train Frank Dukes for real, not just as like a sparring partner. And he goes through all his exercises. So it's a great, they do a lot of great things where, you know, Frank Dukes is fighting blindfolded, or Frank Dukes is having his legs stretched out so he can split even more than he's already splitting. And Jean-Claude Van Damme is known for his splits. He does it in almost every movie. He's the inspiration for other characters who split. And they show him doing the split a lot in his movie. So is him splitting during training, and then him splitting during fighting, and then him just splitting, just meditating. The meditating split. He's doing a split between two chairs. He's doing a split on the floor. He's doing it a lot. It's almost like he's doing too much. So he's continued to do it. I don't know if you've seen a couple of years ago, it was a car commercial. I think it was a car commercial, maybe it was a bus commercial, where Jean-Claude Van Damme is doing a split between two buses or two trucks or something like that. And it's just kind of it's admirable. It's an admirable feat to be able to do that. So to continue with my favorite parts, there is a part where, well, first of all, there are a couple of stupid things here. One is the two sort of subplots that are going on in this movie. So the first subplot is that Frank Dukes is running away from the military, and you have the agents chasing him, the agents Helmer and Rawlins. And you know, they're going around asking questions, and then finally they track Frank Dukes down in Hong Kong, and they're chasing him, and he's running away from them, and they're basically made to look like the Keystone Cops. It's not really a plot point that fully goes anywhere. It doesn't truly add anything to the movie, but they try to make it part of the story to make it more complex. And then the other one is the reporter, Janice Kent, played by Leah Reyes, and she's trying to learn about the Kumite. But nobody would talk to her about it until Frank Dukes decide to take her on the inside to teach her about the Kumite. It's supposed to be a love story, the love story part of this movie. But again, it's kind of a subplot that doesn't really go anywhere except showing the reporter aghast when she finally is able to get into the Kumite as a guest of one of the, I guess the invited audience. She's like, they don't really talk about how she finagled her way to get in, but she's able to get in there, and she's shocked and horrified at the brutality of the fighting. And it gets to the point where she can't handle it. And now she's worried about Frank Dukes, who wants to fight in this tournament because she thinks that he's going to get maimed or killed or something of that nature. But the problem is that it doesn't really go anywhere. It doesn't really add anything to the movie. But I didn't know any better when I first watched it. I was like, it's basically something that happens. You're kind of waiting for that to get out of the way so you can get back to the fighting and the fighting montages. Bless their heart for trying to add something to this movie. But it's like that. It wasn't a distracting enough thing for me because I knew that a fight was coming up. And so the other thing I liked about it was there were some fights that they had concentrated on, so it wasn't just part of the montage. These were the fights that they wanted to focus on. There was one fight between Frank Dukes and this there was an Arab fighter. I can't remember what his name is, but I did write some trivia down about it in later on. So this is a scene that doesn't take place in a tournament. This scene takes place at a bar or some such place, and the Arab man is trying to take the reporter to go out on a date with him. He's like, he's trying to claim the reporter, like she doesn't have any free will, like you're my woman, you're coming with me type of attitude. And Frank Dukes just so happened to see them. He's like, no, you can't just take this woman. But I think that Frank Dukes understands the attitude that this Arab man is having. Like, he's trying to claim this woman as his, and he's going to do with this woman as he wants. So Frank Duke bargains with him that, like, he's going to make a bet, and if he wins the bet, then he gets to take the woman, and the Arab man has to leave her alone. Now, all the while, this woman, the reporter, Janice Kent, she's offended that she's being bargained in this way. But I think at the same time, she sort of understands that this is the only way that she's going to get away from this Arab man. So the trick is, or the bet is that the Arab man is supposed to hold a coin in his hand, and then he's supposed to close his hand before Dukes can grab the coin out of his hand. So it was like a speed contest. So Dukes is like, I bet I can snatch this coin out of your hand before you close your grip. And the Arab fighter agrees to this. So he holds his hand out, open hand with the coin in it. And then they count to three or something. Can't remember. And so at the end of the countdown, Frank go in for the hand, and the Arab man clasps his hand closed, and he thinks he has a coin, and he wants to take the reporter. But Frank says, well, look at your hand. And so the Arab man indeed has a coin, but it's a different coin, and Frank Duke holds up the original coin. So the premise is that Frank Dukes is so fast that not only is he fast enough to snatch the coin out of the man's hand before the man can close his grasp, but he can replace the coin. He can put a coin in the man's hand and snatch the original coin out before the man has had time enough to close the grasp in his hand. That was a neat part. I liked that demonstration. It's just a fun scene. It's same as the scene where you had Frank Dukes has a friendship with Ray Jackson. They don't actually fight in the tournament, which is interesting to have that kind of a friendship. Like, you're friends, but you're going to go in a tournament where you might have to beat each other nearly to death. So that was interesting. The only time they do fight is they're playing this martial arts video game that kind of looks like Street Fighter or something like that, except the video game is set up as like a karate tournament. So Frank Dukes is beating Ray Jackson in this video game. And this is the only time they fight. I thought they did a really good job of building the relationship between them in that moment. So, you know, kudos on them for giving it the old college try of character development. I think what I like about this movie is they try so hard. They're really going for it, but not quite hitting the mark. So I talked about the montages that I like and the fights that they focused on. So one of the fights that they focused on was when Frank Dukes faces the Arab fighter in the ring for the first time and beats him handily. It's a beautiful beating, so to say. And there are lots of these beautiful beatings throughout the movie. One of them is, so they're setting up Xiong Li as the bad guy. So, oh, just a little side note, in case I forget to mention it, that there's a lot taken from Mortal Kombat that I'll mention in the trivia, but one of the things that they had taken from it, I believe, is that, like I said, Bolo Young, he plays the character Xiong Li, but it's very similar to the Mortal Kombat character Xiong Li. I just thought that maybe they took the name from the character in Bloodsport and gave it to their video game character, because they sound and look almost so familiar. So you have Xiong Li from the movie and Chun Li for the video game. I think there is a connection there. So the fight is where Xiong Li actually faces Ray Jackson. So Ray Jackson is a gigantic American with no real delicate fighting technique. He's just a brawler. He's just throwing his arms and his body around. He's just throwing people out of the ring because he's big enough and strong enough to do these things. He's kind of like a hit sponge where fighters will hit him and he doesn't take really that much damage. He just takes it and then throws him out the ring. So there's no delicacy or finesse in Ray Jackson's style, and it's extremely effective. So Bolo Young, arguably, the character he plays is Xiong Li, arguably the most dangerous person in that sport. They're face to face, and Xiong Li set up as a bad guy, and Ray Jackson is gunning for him, just like everybody else is, and Ray Jackson is able to land an early critical blow, you know, puts Xiong Li down on the mat. And he's like, yeah, I did it. I beat him. And his back is turned. It's like, it is both one of my favorite parts and one of the dumbest parts in the movies, because it's like, why are you celebrating while your opponent is on the ground? Like, this is almost a fight to the death. It's like, if he's on the ground, then push him out the ring so that he loses the fight. Or get him in a submission hold or something, right? Don't just turn around just because you knocked him down, because it's not like he was knocked out. He was just knocked down. So why would you turn your back on your opponent just because you knocked your opponent down in this free-for-all, no-holds-bar fighting tournament? But he does, and Xiong Li recovers. He gets up, and Xiong Li is as big as Ray Jackson, and plus he's got all the finesse and techniques of an experienced martial artist, and he does something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it wasn't pretty. He hits Ray Jackson pretty hard, and basically is severe enough where Ray Jackson has to go to the hospital. And this has Frank Dukes all riled up, wanting revenge and whatnot. And he's assured to get it because he knows that he's going to win his fights. And he knows he's Xiong Li is probably will likely win all of his fights. And they're going to meet in somewhere down the line of the tournament. This is normally how these fighting tournament movie goes. There's also a neat scene where it's almost like the culmination of like the agents actually catching up to Frank Dukes. They had enlisted the assistance of the Hong Kong Police Department. So Frank Dukes is walking down this alleyway and you have the police, like maybe in onesies and twosies, coming from like portions of the alley to try to stop the Frank Dukes from getting to where, you know, the final fight, because he's going to the final fight where he fights Xiong Li. And he kind of like beats up the cops on his way to the end of the alley or something like that. And that was a neat moment. Like this movie has a lot of neat moments that I really like. But it's not going to come together for a lot of people. And one of the reasons I like Xiong Li and Bolo Yeung, the actor that plays him, is Xiong Li has this thing where he's taunting the other fighters. So one of the things that he does to taunt Frank Dukes is that he has Ray Jackson's bandana. After he, like, Ray Jackson has his bandana that he wears all the time. So after Xiong Li beats Ray Jackson, he takes the bandana and then he wraps it around his leg. So now he's taunting Frank Dukes because he knows that the two are friends. He's taunting Frank Dukes with this bandana that he's untied around his leg. So obviously, probably my favorite part of the movie is the final fight of the movie. The final fight is just the thing that I remember most about this movie is the match between Frank Dukes and Xiong Li. So the two are going at it. There's a lot of slow motion shots, a lot of neat martial arts play. But like Frank Dukes is riled up and he's actually beating Xiong Li. Like he's beating him handily. And Xiong Li is not about to go out like that. He's not about to lose to this new Westerner. So during the fight, Xiong Li takes out this powder and he throws it at Frank Dukes. He throws this powder at Frank Dukes and Frank Dukes is blinded. Now he can't see. And now he's like, he lands a couple of basically lucky punches, but for the most part, he can't see. He doesn't know where Xiong Li is. And Xiong Li is kind of like kicking him. And then at the same time, is not really, he's almost doing the same thing that Ray Jackson is doing. So like Frank Dukes is kind of feeling around, trying to figure out where Xiong Li is. And Xiong Li is taunting him. And he's just looking to the crowd and just laughing because he done blinded Frank Dukes. And then he'll land a couple of blows. And then he thinks he's like done something special because now he's winning the match and the crowd is cheering and he's really excited that he's winning this match, but he's only winning it because he blinded his opponent with this strange illegal substance that he had hidden in his trunks. The fight continues. And then as the fight continues, as Frank Dukes is getting beat up, Frank Dukes remembers his training, and part of his training was training while blind, like fighting while blind or blocking blows while blind, just walking around Tanaka's house while he was blindfolded. So he digs deep into that blind training, and that's when he starts to combat his blindness in the match. And he overcomes his blindness, he overcomes Xiong Li, and then he gets Xiong Li in a submission hold, and Xiong Li has to say mate or I quit. Interestingly, during most of this film, there are like three ways of where you can defeat your opponent. You can basically knock them out, or you can throw them out the ring, or you can get them to submit. And up until the very end of the movie, you don't see, the only thing you see is people getting knocked out or people getting kicked out of the ring. So this is the only time in the movie where you actually see somebody submit. And that was like the greatest victory, was you got your opponent, or in this case, your nemesis, to submit and to tap out. So that was so those are the reasons why I like this movie, or basically the reason that I like this movie were the fight scenes and the fighting montages and the training montages. And I think that's all I needed. And sometimes that's what I need. Sometimes when I put on a movie, I just need to see some training montages and I'm good. Or I need to see a fighting montage or a fighting tournament montage and I'm good. It's not as, like, when you think about it, The Karate Kid is pretty much the same story. It's basically the same story. It's a tournament, and the person that you're rooting for, he has to face an opponent in the tournament that's his actual natural nemesis. But The Karate Kid is such a better story. It's such it's more fulfilling as a story, and that it's not just a simple fighting story. It's a story about a young boy growing up, and it adds so much to it. And I feel like the people who made Bloodsport, that's what they were going for, but they didn't quite make it, because none of the characters in this movie are fully formed. And one character is based on someone who just lied about his background. As far as a lot of people are concerned, this doesn't even rise up to the quality of a movie that's based on a true story. You can't even say that. Now you gotta admit this movie is fully fictional. What's funny is that even movies that are based on a true story, purportedly, they have a lot of artistic license. So there are not a lot of truthful things going on in this movie that are supposed to be based on a true story. But in this case, in the case of Bloodsport, it's probably not even based on a true story. So that is how we're going to talk about that in the trivia. So stay tuned, or keep listening, or don't pause your recording, or don't skip, because in a minute we're going to talk about the trivia. And we're back with the trivia, most of which came from IMDb, or I think in this case all of it, as we get most of our trivia. So this movie was touted as a true story, but over the years, doubts have arisen about its veracity. Most of the martial arts enthusiasts view Frank Dukes' account of competing in the secret tournament as complete fiction, along with his claims he was an undercover CIA operative. Some have pointed out that nobody else has come forward to confirm his story about competing in a secret tournament, or told their own version. It is now generally accepted that Dukes lied his way into Hollywood, and that he has likely never won or even competed in a single martial arts tournament. Records obtained through the Freedom of Information Act shows that he was only in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve, and that he never posted overseas, let alone to Southeast Asia, as he claimed. The CIA has no record of his ever working with them. His personal brand of martial arts, Dukes Ryu Ninjutsu, is also a complete fabrication. So there you have it. Probably not real. Up next, Frank Dukes never has and does not hold any of the world records listed at the end of the film. Like his own backstory and claims of kumite success, these are all pure fiction. Midway's hit video game, Mortal Kombat from 1992, took huge inspiration from the film and even used a parody of Jean-Claude Van Damme for the character Johnny Cage, who has a similar costume, backstory, and a familiar split punch. According to the game creator, John Tobias, they wanted to make a gritty game based on the film. So if you're familiar with the Mortal Kombat story, they actually wanted to do a video game that starred Jean-Claude Van Damme. They wanted to do a game based on him where they would use his image and he would do the fighting and he would be the hero. But Van Damme was not interested in doing that. So that's when they came, you know, through development and brainstorming and everything, they basically came up with Mortal Kombat. And as a stand-in for Van Damme, they used Johnny Cage. And Johnny Cage, if you played this game, has the famous split punch. So I didn't mention it in my favorite parts, but one of the most impactful moments of the movie is during one of Frank Dukes's fight. He does a full-on split and hits his opponent in the crotch. And in that way, wins the fight. And that's one of the most exciting things that you see out of this movie. And it's what they put in the video game. And that is one of the ways that Mortal Kombat came about. And I also mentioned earlier about how Chong Li and Chung Li sound so similar that I think maybe they got the name Chung Li from Bloodsport. So moving right along. This is one of the few films featuring scenes filmed inside Kowloon City. The Kowloon Walled City before its destruction. It was demolished by the Hong Kong and British governments due to crime and poor living conditions. And if you can still see pictures of it on Google, if you Google the Kowloon Walled City, it's a very dense, packed set of buildings. It used to be a fort, I think a Chinese fort, and there was a lot going on. It was run by the triads, a lot of crime there, and the two governments decided that, you know, they wanted to embetter the whole country, so they raised the whole city. It's kind of hard to say it is a city because it's not even. It's unincorporated. It's not like they had a city hall and a mayor and all that. It looked like the projects in the United States, except much more densely packed. So they took all that down and they replaced it with a park. So up next, Frank Dukes was the fight coordinator for this film. When Jean-Claude Van Damme was cast, Dukes announced that Van Damme wasn't nearly in good enough shape and put him through a 3-month training program. Van Damme, a world championship martial artist in his own right, called it the hardest training of his life. And since Van Damme corroborates this, I'm going to say that that's true. He is definitely in very good shape in this movie, but in my estimation, it seems like he's always been in great shape. And as mentioned, he is a world champion martial artist. I think he has like several karate championship titles, and this has all been corroborated. He's obviously not always been known as Jean-Claude Van Damme. He has a real name, and so these records are found under his birth name. So Jean-Claude Van Damme actually knocked out Bernard Mariano, who played Hussein, with his elbow in the scene made it to the movie. So Hussein is the Arab guy that I alluded to earlier. And this is the guy that he did the coin trick on. So this is their face to face. And he actually knocked out the actor Bernard Mariano with his elbow. And they decide, well, let's keep it in there. Let's keep it in there. I hope that they made sure that Mariano was all right. In the tournament scene, Jean-Claude Van Damme is seen trading kicks when fighting a guy in a gray karate suit with long hair. This fighter is a veteran Hong Kong stunt performer, coordinator, and top-notch martial artist, Yu Shu Wu. He was told to tone down his kicking skills to make Van Damme look better on screen. Jean-Claude Van Damme helped edit the film so it could be released. Well, that's good. He's doing double duty as actor and film editor. Ray Jackson does not use any recognized martial art at any point in the film. Because as I said before, he's just kind of a brawler. The majority of Bolo Yeung's lines are similar to Bruce Lee's in Enter the Dragon from 1973, in which Bolo appeared, such as, I mentioned before, bricks don't hit back. Jean-Claude Van Damme does his trademark splits in a total of 7 times during the movie. Because, of course he does. Frank Duke's brick-breaking demonstration is purely fictional, as the Dim Mak, or Death Touch, a legendary move fabled in Chinese wuxia novels and martial arts folklore. The Dim Mak is an acupressure attack where the attacker quickly strikes his opponent several times in sequence at various spots on his body. Striking an opponent in this method can result in broken bones, paralysis, painful muscle spasms, and even instant death. Pei Pei Chang's character, Jade Fox, uses a paralyzing Dim Mak style attack in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon from 2000. And of course, if you're a fan of Quentin Tarantino, then you definitely see this performed in Kill Bill Volume 2. Is it Volume 2 or Part 2? I can't remember. The second one, the sequel. That, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, moving right along. Both Ray Chow and Bolo Yeung were in Enter the Dragon from 1973, playing similar roles of mentor and secret martial arts tournament opponent, respectively. I can't remember the part that Roy Chow played, but I think that he was supposed to be Bruce Lee's mentor, maybe. I don't think he was in the movie very, you know, he was just in there for a split second and he was gone. The official's command, Junbi, Haji, Hajime, that starts each bout in the Kumite are Japanese Junbei, translate most closely as prepare, while Hajime means begin. Loosely translated, the 3 words would be ready, set, go. In this movie, when Xiong Li defeats Jackson, they use the same camera angles and slow motion techniques that Bruce Lee uses in Enter the Dragon. He took a lot of inspiration, I guess, from Enter the Dragon. The film and Frank Dukes' story claims that the Kumite had 60 rounds. This is a big strike against the veracity of the story, as it is mathematically and physically impossible. Martial arts tournaments are single elimination events, meaning that the contestant who loses once is completely out of the tournament. A martial arts tournament in which fatality injuring one's opponent is permitted could not be possible or organized any other way. Single elimination events have a particular pattern with regards to the number of rounds and number of participants required. Every time a round is added, the number of participants needs to be doubled. A 2-round tournament requires 4 contestants. A 3-round tournament, 8. A 4-round tournament, 16. And so forth. A simple mathematical formula for calculating the necessary number of participants is 2 to the power of the number of rounds. The number of human beings required for a 60-round tournament is millions of times as many as humans as existed on Earth in the year 2022. So, it is, if somebody says that they told you they competed in a 60-round tournament, it's literally impossible. They could not have done that. And yet, this is the type of thing that Frank Dukes, the real-life Frank Dukes, would claim. And that's it for the trivia. Stay tuned, or be aware that the next segment is we check out what the critics thought. And now we're back. We're going to see what the critics thought about Bloodsport. So the critics, professional critics, gave it 46%. The audience gave it 74% on Rotten Tomatoes. Not surprising. And then IMDb has it at 6.8 out of 10. So let's check it out. Brandon Collins from Medium Popcorn wrote, "It's very entertaining despite making absolutely no sense. Terrible acting, but it's so fun. Almost like Roadhouse. The 80s were wild." Yep, that's me all the way. I agree wholeheartedly. That statement encompasses exactly how I feel about this movie. Leonard Claddy from the Los Angeles Times wrote, "Hacking through the jungle of cliche and reservoir of bad acting in Bloodsport are some pretty exciting masters." Yeah. I think that's right also. You know, in this particular segment of what we're talking about, the critics thought, oftentimes I disagree with some of the critics that oppose the movies that I love when I was growing up. It's a natural inclination. But in this case, I can't say anybody has a wrong answer. It's like if somebody would say something bad about this movie, I would have to agree with them. But it won't dim my light for this movie. Carson Tamar from Filmotomy wrote, "Bloodsport might not be anything even close to a masterpiece, but as a fun 80s action romp, it is hard to deny the effectiveness of it." Yes, yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Finally, David Kerr of Chicago Tribune wrote, "The contest format is hopelessly repetitive and inert. The characters would seem underdeveloped in a comic book, and the restricted setting ensures that the action will never develop any real skill or velocity." I can't argue with that. So finally, Bloodsport is, as of this recording, available anywhere you can rent or buy movies. That's it for today. Next week, we have a chat with or about another great movie from yesteryear, that timeless classic from 1983, Scarface. This episode will have a very special guest from one of my favorite podcasts, Florida Men on Florida Man, Wayne McCarty. Follow us on Twitter or TikTok at Backlick Cinema, or on Facebook or Instagram at Backlick Cinema Podcast. And if you're on Mastodon, at Backlick Cinema at mstdn.party. Don't forget that you can contact us with any questions, comments, or suggestions at fanmail@backlickcinema.com. One last time, if you like this show, then please help us grow. To do this, you can subscribe to the show, rate us, or write a review on Spotify, Podchaser.com, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Believe me, it matters. Be safe. Share a movie from yesteryear with your family. Hug your loved ones. And if you're going to be anything, be outstanding.